Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at, well, nurses, cooks, seamstresses, full combat officers, all women who have come a long way in the military. Jennifer Van Haften, our guest, back with us. She's the assistant director of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. I want to talk with her about Wisconsin women service members, and we can look at them from World War I to the present. And I hope you'll join in. Did you have a family member of your family serve, a female member serve in the military? What's the experience like? Or did you? Or are you? What questions do you have about women in service? Love to hear from you. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email, email address ideas@WPR.org. Jennifer Van Haften, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Oh, thank you very much for having me today.
Well, I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of the previous show, but we were talking about the switchboard soldiers from World War One, and I think World War One was really a turning point for allowing women to serve, was it not?
It was one of many, actually. I was just kind of going over my notes because we talk about this a lot when we give talks around the state to various groups. Women have served in unofficial capacities as like nurses, cooks, seamstresses, as you mentioned, you know, as far back as, you know, the American Revolutionary War. We all know a lot, you know, have heard lots of stories about women serving as nurses in the Civil War. They were not part of the military as yet. However, the Spanish-American War of the 1890s led to the senior, you know, senior officials in the Army to see that there was a lot of benefit to establishing a group of Army nurses, the Army Nurse Corps in 1901, because they would get used to kind of how they do things in the Army, and they get trained up and they'd be ready to really roll really quickly. So the Army Nurse Corps was established in 1901 and was under the auspices of the Army, although they were not officially a part of the military either. The first women who were officially part of the military, there was a loophole in who could sign up for the Navy during World War One, and so women could sign up for the Navy and be official yeomen in the Navy in World War One. The Army Signal Corps and the Army Nurse Corps were still not quite part of the apparatus that we consider, you know, the military today. So definitely, though, World War One was kind of that turning point of seeing women kind of, you know, freeing the men for service on the ships. That's why they brought the women and recruited them specifically into the Navy. And so they saw what they could do in World War One, also kind of pushed for the suffrage issue, which, you know, concluded after World War One in 1920, women getting the vote. And so just sort of that was the beginning of showing, you know, women can do a lot of things that men could do.
Do you have histories, and we're going to get talk about other wars, but do you have histories of World War One women from Wisconsin at the museum?
Yes, we do. One that we really get a lot of information about for being Army nurse, and she had her name was Helen Belevsky. She was from Madison, and she, you know, one of the things I was looking at was sort of her motivations, and she had always heard about Army, you know, the Army's behind the Army, behind the gun, and she, you know, didn't realize that she could become part of that apparatus until she joined the Army Nurse Corps, and she was, you know, a graduate nurse from our training schools here in Madison, and she was really happy to, you know, when the cry for overseas nurses came, she was anxious to go, and so she enlisted definitely and, you know, wanted to be a part of it and be a part of the effort.
Very cool. And of course, Jennifer Cheverini was just talking about a couple of young women who were from Green Bay who wound up in the as well, switchboard soldiers, so to speak, during the U.S. Army Signal Corps during World War One.
Yeah, I heard that, and I thought to myself, I'm going to have to see if we have any of that in our collection, and if not, can't we talk talk to the descendants and maybe get a little bit more about it. But that's one of the things that we're always hoping for, is that if people hear us talk about the stories that we've gathered so far, they would, you know, think of a relative, or they themselves have served and would maybe want to stop in and, you know, share that story with us, or, you know, donate collections or something, so that we are able to, you know, get those stories out there. These are things that we really love to do, not just in our museum, but like with social media, there's so many opportunities now to get so much more out there. So I'm hoping, you know, I'm going to have a look at to see if we have any telephone operators in our collection, but if not, I'm hoping some people out there, if they have any great aunts or, you know, great grandparents or anything, that they could share that with us.
Jennifer Van Haften, our guest today, talking about what's the role of women during the wars here, and Wisconsin women, because she directs the Wisconsin assistant director of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. And again, I give that number because I'm pretty sure some people are going to call in on that, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us as well, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And I imagine that there are things that people can see when they come to the museum that relate to World War One and women.
Oh, well, certainly. You know, we only have so much space to tell our stories, which is why we've branched out to our social media. But, you know, we have the Women Nursing Corps service represented by one of our displays has a nurse there. And then, of course, we have some of the stories in there. You know, one of the other ones that I was looking up, you know, that goes into World War II, was Rhoda Ziesler, and she was a captain in the Army Nurse Corps during World War II. She was on Oahu when Pearl Harbor was attacked. So she had started her service before the United States had entered the war, and she was, you know, serving duty on Oahu, and they saw the planes coming through and wondered if it was, you know, a training exercise they hadn't heard about or something like that. And then very soon after, they started getting, you know, kind of those frantic messages that it was definitely the enemy, and they had to start responding and taking wounded and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we've got her diaries and some photographs of her time around there. And so, you know, we like to get that story out there. And actually, that is up in our Souvenirs of Service exhibit that we have, which is up through at least the end of this year. And so her story is featured in there, of some of the things that she picked up, but also, you know, some of the things that she had to endure as being, you know, a person serving.
Sure. Ellen in Waukesha, thanks for calling.
Well, hello. I just wanted to mention, now I'm in my late 70s, but I had a great aunt who was a Yeoman in the First World War. She was from Milwaukee, and she was born in 1892. Her name was Cornelia Hennekins, and she worked at Great Lakes Naval Base in Chicago. And my dad would tell me stories. I knew her when I was a little girl. We were very close. She died in the 80s. But anyway, she would take the train to Chicago for the week and then come home on weekends to visit her family. She was single and never married. And one of the things that was so interesting that my dad told is that she had a very good job there, and she had a male secretary, which was really interesting at that time for a woman to have a male secretary. She wasn't a secretary herself. So I don't know exactly what she did, but I do have her discharge papers, and she ended up working there after the war. She never married, and she worked until, I believe it was the 1950s, when she retired.
Oh, boy. That is such a good story, Ellen. And I know Jennifer's going to want to make a comment on this, and perhaps you can hang on. If you can't, that's fine, too. But we need to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and really enjoying the show today as we talk about the evolution of Wisconsin women in the military. And you can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about women, Wisconsin women in the military, with our guest Jennifer Van Haften. Jennifer is the assistant director of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. Have you visited the Veterans Museum? What exhibit did you enjoy the most? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jennifer, before we take other calls, I wanted to mention Ellen's call. Her great aunt served as a yeoman.
Oh yeah, definitely.
In World War One.
Yeah, that is the service that I was talking about, that women could enlist in the Navy. There was nothing in the law that said whether you had to be a man or a woman, and so at the time, the Secretary of Navy, Josephus Daniels, he really kind of saw what was going on over in Europe and thought, you know, we need to make sure that we're really covered with service, you know, men serving on the seas, but we need all this backup. Like Belevsky said, the army behind the army, or the Navy behind the Navy, and they were desperate to get, you know, other people enlisted. And so he's like, well, it doesn't say that has to be men. Be women and men. So he started, you know, a kind of a recruitment campaign even before the United States entered World War One to get women to enlist. So actually, in all, about, you know, over 11,000 women joined the U.S. Navy, and they did, you know, jobs like they were stenographers and clerks and radio operators, messengers, truck drivers, ordnance workers, you know, mechanic cryptographers, you know, kind of the non-combat shore duty roles, so that they could free the men to, you know, join crews on ships and let them get out for, you know, the actual combat roles.
I think Marine in Manitowoc has something that relates to this. Marine, hi.
Hi, Larry. I have a memoir that my mother wrote about her involvement during World War II. She was a senior in high school, age 16 only, and she received a restricted wartime radio operator's license because, of course, people who worked at the radio station had to be serving in the military. And if I could just read a couple of paragraphs, she starts out with, "I'm sitting at this huge console, big enough to fly an 80-passenger airplane, it seems to be, and I'm all alone counting, 5, 6, 7. I look over the many switches, and I start again, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7. Where is 8? Up here? Down there? Hidden beneath something? I have to find switch 8 and click on it. I need to finish turning off the console in order to shut down the radio station. I'm 16 years old, a senior in high school. The manager of the radio station had asked me if I wanted a part-time evening job and weekend job as a local radio announcer. Another announcer had gone off to war who needed to be replaced. She says, I was radio editor of the weekly Saturday morning Rice Lake High School news program, but Mr. Anderson explained I'd have to jump through a few hoops before he could hire me. He wanted to get by without also hiring a radio operator, and there was a wartime way to do that, since technical operators were off to war. I had to study a booklet of federal communications regulations and rules. One regulation I recall is the maximum number of minutes in a 15-minute time slot that could be devoted to ads. Next, I had to take a cab, no car in our family, to Cameron, 6 miles south on Highway 53. There I boarded a train to St. Paul, Minnesota, and in the big city in the federal building, I took and passed a test on those regulations."
Oh, that's a great story. Jennifer, comment.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic, and that is a fabulous example of, you know, the free a man to fight. And in World War II, it was really the same situation, is that, you know, the military, all the branches of the military realized that in order to get more men freed up to go into combat, they needed to bring women on for many different roles. And so, you know, if we're talking about the evolution of women's roles in the military, World War II was another big step, although, again, they were not, you know, part of the permanent military, but they were joining things. And we've heard all these acronyms before. We've got the WAVES and we've got the WACS, and for the Coast Guard, we've got the SPARs, and the United States Marine Corps Women's Reserves, they were still just Women's Reserves. They were Marines. They didn't get the special acronym that they had there. But, yeah, this is just an example of one of those where they needed to get women into all those other jobs that are happening that are not combat-related so they could send, you know, a man off to fight. And that was one of the recruiting tools, too, that they said, to free a man to fight.
Maureen, that's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing those words with us. Man, 16 years old and doing that.
Yeah.
That's great. Darla in Menominee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Darla.
Hi. Yeah, I was very interested and intrigued by the program we have on today. Thank you. Wisconsin Women in the War. As I was listening to it, I was thinking about my cousin, Wanda Houston. She went to UW South in the home economics major. And then it was, now as I think about it, with the Red Cross, they would go, it was Vietnam time. And these ladies signed up and they went to Vietnam. And basically they were like CNAs. They didn't have a nursing background, but they filled a role in the hospitals and stuff. And
so they were a companion nurse, more or less.
Yeah. And she didn't talk just a whole lot about it. There's a few articles, but I know there was, you know, there's trauma in that. You know, no benefits as far as, you know, with the military, it was more the Red Cross, but there was no benefits there. But
yeah, you're kind of breaking up, unfortunately, Darla. I'm sorry that that's the case. But Jennifer, comment.
Well, yeah, and she was, I think you heard right at the end there that Darla mentioned that they weren't necessarily exactly with the military, but yeah, the American Red Cross, especially in Vietnam, filled, you know, a lot of emergency communications between servicemen and their families, and they were out there, right next to the service members doing work there too. It's not, that's one of those sort of gray areas for us because, you know, American Red Cross is a civilian activity. So oftentimes those kinds of items get donated to the Wisconsin Historical Society. It's kind of how we divide up, you know, keeping of history
sure. In
our great state. So, but you can't discount, you know, a lot of women went through and helped with that as well. And we have, you know, stories and roles of a lot of women who were in the nursing corps during Vietnam too, that are in our collections, and we do try to preserve those as well. So there's a lot of different ways that people could have assisted with the military.
I'm trying to think of my days of watching the TV show MASH, and the nurses there, I always had the idea that they were just part of the military, but that was not necessarily the case.
Well, in Korea, there were still women that were part of the military, and in fact, with the end of World War II, there was the, I want to make sure I get the title right, the Women's Armed Services Integration Act of 1948, and that allowed women the right to serve as permanent regular members of any of the five military branches at that time. And so that meant they could sign up, and they would serve in roles that were, you know, some of the ones that I described that were, you know, stenographers and nurses.
Non-combat.
Non-combat. Yeah, which many of us are really familiar with because, you know, the combat roles really did not open up until they ruled in 2013 that women could start applying for the combat roles. And I believe it's like even as recent as 2018 that women were actually graduated into, you know, doing those combat roles and being well involved with that. So it's really very recently that the combat roles have opened up. But, you know, there were a lot more roles that were opened up in 1994 that got women really close to combat. And so we saw a lot of women, especially with the war in Afghanistan, that were involved with, you know, direct, yeah, you know, hits and groups and things like in country, you know, doing service right along with men and that kind of thing.
That's Darla, again, thank you. It's Cindy in Eau Claire. We'll move to you now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
My mom worked with a woman named Sally Schmidt in 1952. She was an RN in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And there's an article in the Dimensions from MSOE, their magazine, so you can read all about her. Dimensions, Spring, Summer 2015. But anyway, when she was in Korea, it says she was in the 43rd Surgical Hospital. And it says, it is interesting to note that this hospital unit was the prototype for the hit TV series MASH. And the other comment is, okay, she served all over the world, blah, blah, blah. In a 1984 Milwaukee Journal article, it said she spent 25 years in the military living with an attitude she characterized as tough kid, you're second class, citizen, you're a woman. So she was a force to be reckoned with.
So she was in Korea, World War II and Vietnam?
Right. And my mom worked with her between World War II and Korea at Milwaukee Hospital on Kilburn, which is no longer a hospital.
Wow. Thank you, Cindy. Comment, Jennifer.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that, you know, these are like everybody, you've all got these people that you know and they have fabulous stories. So if you have, you know, any of their journals or letters or diaries, anybody in Wisconsin, you know, please contact us at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. The easiest way to look up how to get a hold of us would be to go to wisvetsmuseum.com/collections, and we have some instructions on how to offer us collections that tell these stories about these women's service. In any service we're looking for, I was just thinking about, we have a traveling exhibit that is free to anybody in Wisconsin that would like to set it up, you know, at a public place. We've done it, we've sent it to libraries and city halls and lots of places all over. It's called I Am Not Invisible, and it's a traveling exhibit where we have the documentation of a few women, and some of them that, you know, these women that we have that are Wisconsinites that we have documented, we've also done oral histories with them. So we have their oral histories on our website, which you can also find. And the most interesting thing that I found about some of these women is that these women in Wisconsin were some of the first women performing their particular jobs in the military, especially really recent ones. So there's Yolanda Medina, who is from the Milwaukee area. She was an aircraft technician and was the first female in her field. She was serving with the U.S. Marine Corps from 1981 to 85 with the 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing. And we have Kimberly Stewart, who served with the Air Force and the Air Force National Guard. She was the first female electromechanical team chief and was excellent at what she did. This is just a couple of them. You know, we have some really fantastic people, and they're on our website. You can find them under our oral history section. So what I guess I'm trying to get at is, we're not just looking for, you know, your World War One, World War Two, Korea, Vietnam relatives. We're looking up to the present, because we find that if we can actually talk to the service member themselves, we just get such a rich, deep story for them about what their service was like and, you know, what they contributed and what they felt about, you know, their service to the country. And that, I think, adds so much more depth. I mean, this is stuff that your previous author would love to read about and put into her fiction. You know, it's what puts you there. Hearing it in these women's own words.
And it's wisvetsmuseum.com/collections.
Let me do that again. wisvetsmuseum.com/collections. Yep.
wisvetsmuseum.com/collections. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to an email from Dawn. Her mom was a Navy wave during the Korean War when she met Dawn's dad. And Dawn's wondering, how rigorous of a training did these women go through, and how were they chosen for the role they played during the service?
I can't speak to every, like, individual branches, you know, rigorous. I mean, things changed over the years and that kind of thing. But they were going through classes. They went through training. I'm not sure what their training looked like compared to the men's, especially considering, you know, physical training. But I do know, like, there's also classroom training that they do and, you know, training on how to handle whatever equipment it is that they need to handle. They've got training if they're going to, you know, be working on vehicles and things like that. They're going to get training in that way. So they need to be as up-to-date as the men were with whatever the men were working with. If they were also working with it, they need to do that well. And they go to training schools. I mean, when anybody enters the military, after kind of your basic, you know, your boot camp stuff, you will have training schools to get you set up for your jobs that you're going to do in the military. So you want to make sure that, you know, in the military, they want to make sure that everybody knows what they're doing and they do it well, and that includes women as well as men.
Yeah, I know just from Jennifer's book, Jennifer Cheverini's book, that the Signal Corps women who were working on the front lines had to, well, they had physical training, of course, but they also were trained in how to handle a pistol, and they had to carry a gas mask with them at all times, and they had to learn how to those kinds of roles because they were right at the front line in World War One.
Right, right, and that would be the same for, you know, any woman who is going to be, you know, closer to the front line. They would have gotten training in those kinds of things with pistols and things like that. You know, it's true across the ages as well, and obviously as women, you know, throughout the years and, you know, 1994 and on, their training just becomes closer and closer and closer. And, you know, I think it's essentially pretty much like the men's, you know, and now that they're serving in combat roles side by side, obviously everything is going to be the same all the way across. So, you know, depending on the job that you do, they're going to go get the same training as the men do for the jobs that they are doing.
Willie and Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi, I wanted to mention some women that I knew, some of them individuals, early in my flying career. I met a number of women who had been what were called WASPs, Women's Auxiliary Special Pilot or something like that. These women flew new aircraft all over the world to the military units where the aircraft were needed, newly manufactured aircraft. They got a lot of really valuable training and experience and were very useful in the war effort. And, of course, after the war, many of them did a great deal of teaching of flying and carrying on aviation culture, good flight instructors, charter pilots, and things like that.
That is really interesting. Jennifer, were you familiar with the WASPs?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I forgot to mention them. I realized. I was like, I didn't cover all five branches. The WASPs are the Women Air Force Service Pilots, and they are the Army Air Force branch of women pilots. Mostly what they did, like he said, is they flew the planes to get them to places. So then the pilots are trying to, you know, get them to combat and things like that. Then they take off and go into combat with it. So that is definitely something they did. And I forgot about that one. And I don't know if some folks may not know that the Air Force was part of the Army until after World War II, and then it was separated out as a separate branch.
Yeah, Willie, thank you so much. That's a great story. Well, let's talk a bit. It was just a couple of minutes left here. Let's tell us a little bit more about the museum. I've been there many times and visited. I always liked it. But for those who aren't familiar with it, where is it located, and what can what our listeners are going to find there?
Yeah, certainly. Love to do that. We are in Madison, and we are on the Capitol Square. So if you have ever come down to visit the Capitol, we're just right on the square at the top of State Street. The other end of State Street is UW-Madison itself, and we're on the corner next to the Capitol. The physical address is 30 West Mifflin Street. And we are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. We are open a little later in the summer on Fridays until 6 p.m. and then also on Sunday during the summer from noon until 5 p.m. So the other great thing about us is that we are free to the public. Anybody who wants to come visit us can come through our galleries. And one of the really exhibits that we've really enjoyed lately putting together is our latest, it's hard to call it temporary because it's going to be around, you know,
for quite a while,
several more months or whatever. But people have really been enjoying our exhibit called Souvenirs of Service, the things they kept. It's an exhibit of, you know, what service members brought with them to remind them of their time in working in the service. And so it's not just people who served in combat, but it's also people who didn't serve in combat and what they brought with them from, you know, when they served, you know, stateside all over the country, they had some things that they brought home with them, to serving all over the world. So that's really kind of what that's meant to point out, is that across time, there are some things that you notice that people have always brought home with them from their service. And then there's the unusual that we've highlighted too. One of the ones that I really think is fascinating is that there is an evening gown that we have on exhibit, and it's made out of the parachute that saved the man's life, and he mailed it home to his wife and asked her to make something out of it. So it's parachute material that saved his life.
Oh, it's a great story. Jennifer, thank you so much. I look forward to another visit from you. Appreciate it very much. Jennifer Van Afton is the assistant director of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. Go online and take a look. And if you've got some materials you want to contribute, you can find it there at wisvetsmuseum.com/collections. Well, tomorrow we're going to take a look at college athletes being allowed to make paid endorsements, and we'll look at the UW volleyball camps. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.